Well, Dave play drums.
Okay, good evening, everybody. It's 7 o'clock. Time to call to order the town of Discovery Bay's regular meeting for the board of directors. If I could get everyone to stand up and have Monica, our landscape manager, lead us from the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Can you get roll call, please?
Roll calls are taken. Let the record show all members are present, with the exception of Director Graham, who is absent.
Okay, thank you. This is the opportunity for public comments. This is a chance for anyone in the audience or online who wants to address the board about anything not on tonight's agenda. Just keep in mind, per the Brown Act, we will not be responding, but if you have questions or want to talk more, we'll be here after the meeting. Is there anyone online that has their hands raised?
There are no hands raised.
Okay, is there anyone in the audience that wants to come up and make a public comment? Okay, seeing none, then we'll close public comments and we will move to the consent calendar.
I make a motion to approve the consent calendar.
I second the motion.
Roll call, please.
Director Belcher? Director Graves, Vice President Graves, President Coutu.
Aye. Okay, motion carries. With that, we will move forward to our area agency presentations. Exciting audience. From Diane Burgess' office, Supervisor Diane Burgess' office, excuse me.
Good evening, everyone. I'm President Coutu, Vice President Graves, directors, staff, and residents. I am Clara Laura, Deputy Chief for Supervisor Burgess, District 3, and I'm happy to be back since my last quarter to update you on District 3 events. I have an update on the County Service Area P6 Citizens Advisory Committee. A meeting was scheduled for April 8th. But had to be canceled due to lack of quorum. It was then rescheduled for April 29th. However, had to be canceled again that same evening for lack of quorum. The committee currently has 4 of its 5 seats filled. On March 31st, Contra Costa County officially broke ground on the East County Service Center in Brentwood. The 3-story, 117,000 square foot facility will serve as a one-stop hub for in-person services and hold approximately 440 staff across 9 county departments. The departments will include Employment and Human Services, Contra Costa Health, the District Attorney's Office, Public Defender's Office, Probation, Clerk Recorder and Registrar of Voters, Veterans Service Office, the Department of Information and Technology, and the District 3 Supervisor's Office. In addition to bringing services closer to thousands of East County residents, the center will also bring jobs closer to where many employees already live. It will significantly shorten commutes, reduce fuel costs amid rising gas prices, and ease congestion on Highway 4 during peak travel hours. Construction is anticipated to be completed in 2027. In March, Supervisor Burgess's office organized and held the inaugural International Women's Day celebration at the board chambers and marked this milestone event by honoring outstanding women who lead, serve, and inspire across the county. In April, the county marked its 32nd annual celebration of the farm workers' rights movement, honoring the resilience of generations of farm workers and their continued pursuit of fairness in the workforce. At this event, the Board of Supervisors celebrated several Youth Hall of Fame awardees for their leadership, creativity, and contributions within their communities. And then this month, next Tuesday, May 12th, you're all invited to the 4th annual Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander commemorative celebration in Martinez. You can also participate and watch online via Zoom. Details are on the county website at contracosta.ca.gov. I've also provided flyers to all of you and one with the clerk if anybody would like to see it, and we hope to see you all there. And on Saturday, May 16th, the Contra Costa Environmental Health Department is collecting waste tires in Byron on Main Street in front of the post office from 8 a.m. to 12. There are quantity restrictions and additional eligibility requirements that can be found on the flyers I've provided to you. I've also left some on the counter there. And for any additional information or questions, please call the number on the flyer. That ends my update for the district, and I'm available for any questions. Seeing none, I say thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate you coming out. We'll move forward with the sheriff's office. So let's kind of wait.
Good evening, everyone. For the month of April, Discovery Bay had 329 calls for service. Of those calls, deputies drew 30 reports and had two arrests. Couple of updates from last month's meeting. Deputies did a really good job regarding the Discovery Bay maintenance yard burglary. They wrote a bunch of search warrants. They identified a suspect. Unfortunately, the case wasn't filed with the DA's office due to the lack of evidence. It's not saying the case is not closed, but as hopefully as more things come forward, we can reintroduce that case to the DA's office and they will file. So it's not closed. It's just kind of pending right now with some other things going on. So, so our contract cities of Danville, Arinda, Lafayette, they have motor officers that do traffic control within those cities. I got approval to tap on those motor officers to come out here to Discovery Bay and do like a patrol traffic saturation with the two resident deputies. So we got authorization for it to kind of help out the CHP not being out here as much as we all want them to be. So expect in the future a huge police presence pretty much right here in Discovery Bay proper. So that is coming. There's some logistical things that I have to work out to be able to get them all out here, but we got approval. So that should be coming in the next few months. Follow up on last month, the Delta Blitz is happening. I talked to Marine Patrol. It is going to be August 1st, and that's going to take place the same day as the Big Cat Poker Run. Obviously, there's going to be a ton of boats on the waterways, so they're going to saturate with a bunch of counties, and a bunch of coppers are going to be out on the water, so we'll see how that goes.
It'll go great. I was just on a Big Cat Poker Run meeting tonight, so.
Well, let them know.
Ready for it.
And also a little update on Marine Patrol is their schedule change will be Memorial Day weekend. So they'll be going, I think, till 8 or 10 o'clock at night. So they'll be out on the waterways later into the evenings throughout the summer. So that is all I have. Open to questions.
I do have a question just out of curiosity. So sure. In the big monthly report, there's a ton. I mean, there's like 2.5 pages of service to citizen. What's an example of a service to citizen?
Somebody does a security check of, let's say, the shopping center. They can code it out on our CAD as an STC. Or if I get a phone call from any of you guys that goes through dispatch, I code it out as an STC. I'm on a call right now being here. I code it out as a service to citizen. So it's something that just doesn't get it's like the default code for our CAD. For if there's no crime or anything like that.
There's no crime or report written.
Correct.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So you'll see a ton of those every month.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
I don't see anyone from the Highway Patrol, but I do see Confer.
Good evening. Tracy Detter with Contra Costa County Fire. We did email over a presentation, which I see you have up. Very good. Thank you. I'm just going to briefly go through some 2025 accomplishments, and then we are going to talk through what we are looking forward to this coming year. So next slide. In 2025, on July 1st, we completed the Rodeo Hercules annexation. I believe I talked about that probably last time I was here, so I don't think that's too new for you all. We did introduce a new fire district website. It is a little easier to navigate. So if you go to our website, hopefully reporting things like weed abatement complaints are, and I'll get into this a little bit more, our information on our weed abatement requirements are all on our website, and we are hoping that it's easier for our citizens to navigate. We completed Fire Academy 61 and brought in 30 new hires, and also completed paramedic training for 12 of our personnel, which continues our commitment to provide advanced life support. We broke ground and started our communication center remodel last year. It is winding down, and we actually hope to move into it in June of this year. And then we broke ground on Station 94 in Brentwood. Next slide.
Is that the downtown station?
That's the downtown station, yes.
Finally going forward, that's good.
I'm sorry?
Finally going forward, that's
good. It is, yeah. Yep. It's in the air. are coming up this year in July. We plan on transitioning the hazardous materials program from county health to fire. We will merge our two hazardous materials response teams into one hazardous materials response team. All the personnel from health that are associated with that program are coming over to fire. So it will, you know, if you have any businesses that deal with county hazmat for any of their CUPA programs, it will be the same personnel. Currently, all the phone numbers are staying the same, but you will start seeing them in a new uniform. We have submitted to Brentwood planning for a new fire station 90 in Brentwood. So that's the one on Lone Tree that will work its way through the process. We're not on the planning schedule yet, but that's the second fire station in Brentwood. And then fire station 94 is scheduled to be completed in December, and we hope to be staffing it in January of next year. We also completed two additional traffic safety units. You can see they're in the bottom left corner of the slide. We currently have one at Fire Station 1 in Walnut Creek, and we actually want to put one on the 4 corridor, so one's going to come somewhere out east. We don't have a station yet. We've been putting them with our trucks. There's an attenuator on the back like you see Caltrans has, so we're trying to protect our apparatus during long incidents from vehicle accidents. And then we do have our helicopter back this year. Contract started May 1st, so last Friday. PG&E is our partner in with us again this year for that contract. So it will respond throughout the county. It is stationed here in Byron or next door in Byron. You will see it training when it's not being used for a fire. Next slide.
Is that the actual helicopter you use?
That's the new helicopter. So we have a different helicopter than we used last year. That's a picture of it. It does now have a logo on it. That was the initial photo before we put our logo on it, but that is the helicopter. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
It is slightly larger than last year's helicopter.
Okay.
Zero motor hour helicopter, but it's not new. It's basically completely rebuilt, new engine, but not brand new. Our calls for last year, so total incidents in 2025, 131,000 across the district. You can see the type of incidents that we respond to. EMS is the majority of our calls as usual. And if you go to the next slide, you can see Discovery Bay specific information. In Discovery Bay, we broke out the first 3 months of this year, so it doesn't include April, but from January through March. We had 233 medicals, which means our engine is responding with an ambulance, 16 ambulance-only calls, 16 alarms, 5 vehicle accidents, 12 hazardous conditions, and you can see the rest of the numbers there. I know you like to know our dispatch times, turnout times, and travel times, so all those are listed for every month from January, February, March. I tried to provide that every time. Next slide.
Can I ask you a quick question on
Yes,
that?
You can.
So, like, the travel time is 1026. Does that... Obviously, that doesn't include the dispatch time, so your total time would be 11 minutes. I'm looking at January, is that approximate? Or that is that, are they all like?
It'd be closer to 12 minutes.
12 minutes. Yeah.
So dispatch time is how long it takes. Thank you. I appreciate that. So dispatch time is how much time the call center takes to process the call, dispatch the units, and then from the time they dispatch to the time they go responding in the engine, so with turnouts on, in the engine, wheels rolling, that's end of turnout time, and then wheels rolling to on scene is travel time. Yeah.
So if someone were to ask the response time for January, what would that be, all three combined or just travel time?
The reason I broke it out is historically we've provided you all three together. Per NFPA, actually dispatch time is a separate time and response time is actually just turnout time and travel time. So I've continued to give you all three numbers because if I just give you two of them, it's going to look like we had this huge improvement and you're going to ask me why. And I'm going to say actually nothing changed. So I'm giving you all three numbers. At some point in time, I probably will go back to combining turnout and travel time, which is true response time, and just call it dispatch time separate. But I told them to leave them all separate this time. I think I did the same thing last.
I'm used to seeing response time.
Yeah.
As opposed to it broken out.
Yeah. And I think historically, like I said, we've provided all three as response time, but that was incorrect. Response time is technically turnout time, travel time. But I want to be transparent and say there's also dispatch time. So if you're actually, you know, starting a clock from when you call 911, it's all three times added together.
And I'm assuming the turnout time, sorry, I didn't know. Your hand went up after I took off. The turnout time is probably dependent on what you're responding to, right? So it takes you a little bit longer if it's something that's more extensive.
Yes, and also where, you know, where the unit is at the time, what they're doing, how long it takes to get to the engine. Obviously, they shouldn't be very far from their engine at any point in time. But yes, if you're suiting up to go to a structure fire, it's going to be different than if you're going to a medical call. And it also depends on, like I said, where they're at, either in the station or if they are out and about on another call. All that can affect turnout time.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
But that's okay. No, no problem. So is that with, are those times within your metric that you're trying to adhere to?
Yeah, so our metric is we want to respond. I have to stop and think because we use NFPA's time. We want to respond 90% of the time within 10 minutes. But that is also, there are a couple different metrics. It is a different time for medical versus if we're actually coming to a fire. If we're counting to a fire, they actually count how many units you get on scene to actually respond into an incident within that period of time. So then we need to actually wait for additional engines to arrive. Our goal is to have everybody on scene and able to respond to a fire quickly, of course, because we can rescue people, we can start putting out the fire. But here, your only engine is here in Discovery Bay. Your next unit is coming either from Brentwood or Oakley. And I think I've mentioned this before, but that is partially why, although we're putting two stations in Brentwood, it will affect the time, our response time here in Discovery Bay. It will affect how many units we can get here quickly to a structure fire, because we have two additional units that will be in Brentwood coming here at a from a closer location than Antioch and further out. So
what about ambulance?
Yes.
Metric that you, the, so I imagine that all of those different, like you mentioned before, they're kind of all blended together, right? The response times, the average response times.
Those, the response times are Confire's response times. Those do not include the ambulance only calls.
It doesn't.
It does not. Yeah. If you would like that going forward, I can pull it. But that specifically looking at
with the
fire response calls.
There, I thought that perhaps it would be included.
Yeah.
No.
No, they counted that in the calls that we responded to, because if we don't count that, then people have that question. But in response times, we specifically pulled our numbers.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
So with the two new stations, mm-hmm. Is there increased apparatus also? Is that going to bring more engines on?
Yes.
Okay.
So Fire Station 94 in downtown Brentwood will be an additional engine.
New to the system. Okay.
Fire Station 90 will get the truck that's currently at 92. So when we took over East Contra Costa, we immediately added a truck to increase resources in East County, with the understanding that that was temporarily at that station while we built an additional station. So that won't be an added resource. It's one we added two years ago.
It will be closer to us, so that really will.
But it will be closer to you.
Response time here at Discovery
Bay.
Yes. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I just have one question for you.
Sure.
So picking up from Director Belcher's question, so if a 911 call is placed for a medical situation, mm-hmm. how does it logistically happen? What happens?
Yeah, so our dispatchers have a matrix, and they will ask specific questions based on the type of call. So if you call and say, you know, my friend is sick, they might say, you know, how does he feel? What is he doing? Is he conscious? Is he breathing? And they go through a series of questions to determine what level medical call that is and what is the appropriate response to it. So if it is not something that needs advanced life support, we can send a BLS ambulance, basic life support, so something without a paramedic. If it's something that is not urgent, but we still think there's an ALS component, we can send an ambulance only. If it's something that's urgent, we will send an engine and an ambulance, so whoever is closest and can get there faster will have a paramedic on scene.
In the extreme situation, typically, mm-hmm. does the ambulance arrive before the truck, or does the truck arrive before the ambulance, or is it kind of...
Typically, we arrive before the ambulance, typically, but there are always exceptions to that case. The ambulance happens to be driving down the road and is very close, but obviously, we have fire stations strategically located throughout the county. Ambulances, as they're getting calls, are driving, you know, patients typically to a hospital, and they're out of service for periods of time. And so, typically, we will respond and arrive on scene prior to an ambulance.
Thank you.
Okay. Next slide. So wildfire preparedness is actually this week. This week is Wildfire Preparedness Week. I put a QR code up there that you can scan. It has more information on the LRA areas, the very high fire hazard severity zones, where they are located. You are actually kind of lucky in this area. You do not have a very high fire hazard severity zone, but we do have information on our website if you want more information on home hardening, creating defensible space. All that information is found on our website and by scanning that QR code. Next slide. Our weed abatement deadlines for Discovery Bay are May 15th. Actually, all of East County is May 15th. Our weed abatement standards can be found also on our website. You can scan the QR code. You can go to our website, which is listed at the bottom of the slide. On our website now, we do accept complaints and on weed abatement violations. So if there's an area of concern that you have or that your citizens have, you can direct them to our website and they can place it there, or they can always pick up the phone and give us a call and talk to someone as well. Next slide. That ends my presentation. I'm happy to answer any additional questions you have.
I could have bombarded you with a whole bunch.
Okay. Might as well ask it while the slide's up. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the information.
Thank you, appreciate it. Okay, moving forward. Is Justin going to be doing this online or is he here? Then we'll move forward to the urban management plan status update.
Hello, good evening. Can you all hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great, wonderful, thank you. Yeah, thanks for accommodating the online presentation. I'm at the Aqua Conference this week, actually. So we prepared this presentation to provide a status and preview of the upcoming 2025 urban water management plan that we've been working on with staff. Just as an overview, you know, with this presentation is just to give you a look at what's going to be in the 2025 plan. The goal is to have this released for a public review on May 20th, the public draft, and then bring it to the board on June 3rd for the public hearing and adoption. The urban water management plans do July 1st to DWR. So this presentation, we just wanted to give you a heads up on what's going to be contained inside the plan that's going to be released for public review in just a few weeks. So we could go to the next slide. So that's the purpose and outcome, which I just covered. We're going to just give you an overview of what this plan is, provide you with what the key findings are inside the plan, and then just make sure you're aware of what the schedule is going to be for it. We can move to the next slide. So what the plan is, the Urban Water Management Plan, is a document that's required by the state of California, DWR, Department of Water Resources, and it's a five-year cycle. And so this year, it's going to be due July 1st. It's July 1st of the year of the cycle. So we're updating from the one from 5 years ago, which was the 2020 plan. It provides an outlook on supply and demand over a 25-year horizon. So it looks at growth, possible growth scenario from now until 2050 in the demand. And it evaluates the reliability of your supply under various drought conditions. And essentially, this is just following the guidebook from DWR. So there's required chapters, required sections, required tables. So everything in there is just really complying with that water code. And the necessary reason to do it is because your LAFCO and county planners need this when they're approving development projects. It establishes that there's adequate water supplies. And then as the state's been rolling out new water efficiency standards, it's just another location where those kinds of standards are being reported out. And then, of course, if there was ever a desire to pursue loans or grants, the state requires that these are on file, these urban water management plans. So that's the overview of what it is. We can go to the next slide. For the schedule, we've been working on the draft with staff. We have a completed administrative draft. We're calling it, it's kind of the internal review that we're doing with Dina and Aaron and staff right now. And we're doing this committee presentation to inform you of what's going to what key findings. May 20th would be the release date for a 2-week public review, so that it's meeting water code requirement, that it's out there for public review 2 weeks prior to the public hearing, which would be June 3rd. And then the public hearing would be kind of two phases. There'd be the public hearing that's to receive any public comment. I'll provide a presentation on the urban water management plan again. And then following any discussions that the board has, there would be, the board can consider adopting the plan by resolution. And if it's adopted, then we would include those adoption documents to the plan and submit it to DWR. So that's the schedule. These are the chapters in the plan. I'm just going to like briefly say what they are. I don't need to spend too much time on this, but these are all DWR. These are all aligned with the DWR guidebook, basically. So chapter one is just the overview of what it is and why we're doing it. Chapter two is how it was prepared, what agencies we coordinated with, and what the adoption procedures are. Chapter three is a description of your service area, any updates that have happened in the last 5 years, and the basis for population growth in this 25-year outlook. Chapter four is based on those population projections. It's a prediction of water demand. And chapter four also reports on some of the water loss standards that the state's been rolling out. Chapter five is reporting on the SBX 7-7, and that was something that's already passed. It was the 20% reduction by the year 2020. It was an older regulation that's already passed, and just it's a chapter that needs to be in there to say whether or not it was complied with, which the town did comply with it. Chapter six is establishing how much water we have. And so it describes sections for groundwater, which is the biggest section of the chapter, saying what supply you have in your groundwater. And so it really references heavily the GSP in establishing those volumes. And then it has some just short sections describing, you know, other access to other possible water opportunities. There's a section on recycled water and wastewater that's like required that the state wants to know what kind of potential access there is to recycled water. So that's described in there. And then future projects, such as, you know, exploring surface water opportunities. So it kind of describes all your water supply situation. Chapter seven is taking that demand and that supply and doing an analysis on the reliability and the drought risk assessment. I apologize for the typo there on that, but drought risk assessment looks at how much supply you would have in a single dry and multiple dry years, which is informed by the GSP. Chapter eight is just a recap of the town's water shortage contingency plan. And that, of course, we've already adopted. The board adopted that at a previous meeting. So chapter eight is just kind of providing the summary. We attach that water shortage contingency plan as an appendix. And then chapter nine is just a description of the demand management measures, which is really like the town's water waste ordinance and water efficiency programs and communication. So that's what's inside of the plan. We could go to the next slide. So since 2020, what's new? You know, it's the updated population and demand projections from 25 to 50. It's the updated water shortage contingency plan that was adopted March 4th. Since 2020, the town's been a part of the East Contra Costa Subbasin Groundwater Sustainability Plan, adopted 2022. So a lot of information being pulled from that to populate the supply descriptions. The other new thing is reporting that the Urban Water Plan wants on these new regulations. And these new regulations are water loss standards and water use objectives. Now, I'm just going to say there's a slide near the end of this presentation on this, so we'll talk about it then. But these two standards are not regulated by DWR. DWR is who kind of regulates the urban water management plans. Those standards are regulated by the State Water Resources Control Board. And there's regulation right now. These standards are being developed, and there's kind of water loss standards being developed, but there's no enforcement taking place. So long and short of it is the urban plan just kind of provides a status update on what those numbers are starting to look like for these standards that are being developed. Okay, that's good. And there will be another slide where we focus on that a little bit more. Next slide. So for the premise of growth, this is the town's service area boundary. We're just showing kind of the community development area, the sphere of influence, the urban limit line. Those areas with the salmon kind of pink color is the possible future development sites. These are all the, you know, developments that we know of within the urban limit line, mostly pulled from kind of the development projects that we know of, and also pulled from the general plan, the county's general plan opportunity sites. So it's just for visual, seeing what some of the context is for growth, really. Yep. Okay. Next slide. And this is just some context of historical production and connections. This isn't actually in the urban water management plan. I just like to put it here since we're talking about water forecast. We know that the town's demand, you know, has varied over the last decade or so because of the drought. There was an intense reduction of water usage and a lot more efficiency coming in terms of water conservation. So the last 10 years or so, from 2015 on, that's kind of the new norm is what's shaped up to be. And that's really the basis for the demand projections, is that there is a little bit of uptick, I would say, since the drought, but it's essentially kind of established the new demand factors based on that data set. So we can move on. So this is the conclusion, and we did a update a few months ago on the population and demand projections that are going in the urban water management plan. There's a whole presentation on kind of what the basis was for it. These are just the numbers here. This is kind of the conclusion, just kind of providing it again. So the population there, obviously this is a more of an aggressive growth hypothetical scenario. And the basis is that from now until 2035, the assumption is that the infill, like Chikini Ranch and other in the infill properties like Pantages and those other infill sites, would be built out within 10 years. That's a very hopeful, you know, kind of aggressive estimate. And then beyond that, it would be growth based on the historical growth patterns. Now, the reason I just kind of highlight that is because that's probably a lot more growth than would might occur. This is like the upper end. If we were to say there's a max, this might be like the maximum the town might see. And the reason to do that in this document in particular is because then we establish that there is adequate supplies for that level of growth. And as I've mentioned in previous, this is not a master planning document. It's not a document that says what kind of infrastructure you need to support that growth. A master plan is something really specific to you would do for like a development project to understand how much and what type of infrastructure you need. This is, again, a regulatory document reporting to state saying, hey, if we grew at a very fast rate, there is adequate supplies within our ground, in our groundwater basin, in our current supply portfolio to support that type of growth. So that's the point there. So the maximum growth right now, 2025, was 1 million gallons, 1,014 million gallons per year is what was used. And if it grows at that aggressive rate by 2050, it would be more than double that. It would be 2,432 million gallons per year. We could go to the next slide. So from the water supply standpoint, you're a groundwater system. You size your wells for your infrastructure capacity, which is based on your daily flow. And that's not the analysis within the urban water management plan. But just for that context, your current infrastructure provides you with 6 million gallons per day, and that's your wells and your treatment plants. And then once well 8 is online, that goes up to 8 million gallons per day. And you size that infrastructure to meet your maximum daily needs, your maximum daily flows. For the urban water management plan, it's really about annual supply. How much annual capacity do you have within your supply portfolio? And for you, that's the East Contra Costa Subbasin. And that GSP reports that currently the basin as a whole is projected to be sustainable. The Basin GSP plan actually uses these same demand numbers that we had in here and the growth numbers. It uses that more aggressive growth outlook and looks at various drought scenarios to establish whether what the sustainable yield would be. And the sustainable yield for the basin is 72,000 acre feet per year. And the water budgeting that's done in that GSP made some assumptions. And one of those assumptions was that Discovery Bay would have a supply of 7,500 acre feet per year, which happens to be 2,500 million gallons. So it's the same amount of demand that's being projected. So basically they're saying there's sustainable supply for that demand. So that's what we've have in the GSP that's brought into the urban water management plan is the sustainable yield and the available supply for Discovery Bay. Okay, moving on to the next slide. So annual supply versus demand, now comparing those. So there's the demand growth is, like I said before, 1,014 million gallons to a little over 2,400 million gallons. And that's not accounting for any future water savings or water reductions. That's just based on the patterns of demand right now. The available supply, as reported in the GSP, is a very large number for the basin. And it had an assumption that Discovery Bays would be 2,500 million gallons. So box checked, there's enough supply for your demand. So there's adequate supplies available to meet projected demand, and there's no anticipated impacts during normal single dry or multiple dry years. And then, of course, the GSP is handled and regulated by the state and has annual reporting and updates every 5 years. So it's a continually monitored conclusion. That conclusion itself gets evaluated as we move in time. So that's the current state. All right, next slide. Now, this is the slide where we're going to talk about. This is the water loss regulations that the state is rolling out. They're not enforced yet, and they are under the State Water Resources Control Board. And I only say that because the Urban Water Management Plan is under DWR. However, DWR wants us to report on the status of those upcoming regulations in the Urban Water Management Plan. So that's what this summary provides you with, kind of where we're at on that. So the water loss standard is the SB 555. That's what's required that we do water audits every year. There's a validated water audit, and it establishes and it estimates what the losses are. And it separates losses in terms of two categories. It says your total production and then your total metered consumption. And the difference between those two is just your total water loss. And then through the auditing process, they learn about how metering is done and accuracies, and they make an assumption on how much of those losses are just from inaccuracies in accounting. And they say, those are your apparent losses. And then everything else they assume is like leakage, and they call it real losses. So the state also is unfolding this other standard called water use objectives, SB 606, another typo, sorry, 606. And that's where we hear about like indoor usage being, you know, 55 gallons per capita per day. We hear about that being a standard. Well, that standard shows up in the water use objective SB 606. And those water use objectives are being developed. There's reports that are going to the state where they want to know what our total water use objective is. If we factored in the indoor, like an indoor factor of 55 gallons per capita per day, and then we have equations they let us use to make an outdoor water use factor for residential and commercial and institutional and the water losses. And they say, okay, that's your total water use objective. They're not being enforced yet, but they are being developed. And the enforcement's going to begin in 2028. So what's in this urban water management plan is only reporting on the water loss standard, that one component of it, that first one, the water losses. And the state has already assigned what they believe is the best standard for Discovery Bay, for every agency. They assigned a unique standard for every agency. And that's based on the water audits that have taken place over the last 8 years or so. And they established the baseline water loss from Discovery Bay of it. It's not on this slide, but 19.9, and that's in gallons per service connection per day. That's what the audits showed in the baseline years, which was 2017 to 2020, was an average real water loss of 19.9 gallons per service connection per day. And then the state has an economic model that they use to determine what they believe is the most economically efficient water loss for that agency based on that agency's cost for power and cost for chemical. And they have like 27 factors that go into this economic model. And they said, okay, Discovery Bay, your standard is going to be 13.9. Your baseline was 19.9. We're saying your standard is going to be 13.9. So they're saying you should reduce from 19.9 to 13.9. Then the Urban Water Management Plan also asked for, what's the most recent audit say? Okay, the most recent audit said it's actually 63.2, which was 2024. So the baseline years were 17 through 20, and the most recent audit said 63.2. So just note this, there's a lot of variability in the water loss calculation, and there is changes that have occurred also within the district with metering and maintenance on AMI. And between now and 2028, there's still opportunity for us to go back to the state and say that target that they set for us isn't representative for certain reasons, and provide more information to kind of adjust what that standard should be for Discovery Bay. But right now, what's in the plan, urban plan, it's a very brief section. It has a table that says, okay, what's the baseline? 19.9. Okay, what's the standard that the state is setting for you? They reported to us it's 13.9. And what was your most recent water year? 63.2. And then there's a little narrative on it. And so I just wanted to highlight that and bring that to your attention. That's probably the most different thing that's in this 2025 plan that wasn't in any of the prior plans. And I imagine there may be questions on that, but that's what I have for you on this slide. And if you got questions, you can let me know. So the key takeaways for this urban water management plan is that it confirms the town has adequate water supplies. It has a very, you know, high conservative growth and demand assumption built into that. The groundwater remains a sustainable supply. And this plan is consistent with all of the state reporting requirements. So what you're going to see being released on the public draft on May 20th is built around those DWR guidelines and making sure that, you know, reporting all the info that needs to be reported in there. That's it for that slide. Next steps, of course, just kind of set them. But May 20th, public draft release. Right now, we're working with the staff on that public draft. We have an administrative draft that's being reviewed, and we'll be making refinements to it up to May 20th. Once it's released on May 20th, that'll be the draft we'd like the public for public review and board review and possible board adoption on June 3rd. So that's that. And we could go next slide, which is probably just thank you. There we go.
Justin, this is Leslie Belcher. I have just a question. Maybe you could describe, and maybe you spoke to this and I missed it during the presentation, but when you're talking about the difference of what they're tracking between the baseline, the of 19.9, the Town of Discovery Bay standard of 13.9 gallons that we need to get to in the future, and the most recent audit of the 63.2, what are some of the things that other agencies have done? This is a two-part question to kind of get towards that goal and become in compliance. That's the first question. And the second question is since enforcement's not going to take place until 2028, there's some considerable time for this to be worked on. What types of PEEP enforcement mechanisms does the state have in terms of regulating this?
Okay. Yeah. On the, let's see. So the first question was, I'm sorry, actually, can we say the first question one more time?
Oh, that's okay, no problems.
Yeah.
It's talking about the standards,
yeah.
Right? So the standard, the audit is, you said, was 63.2.
Yeah.
The baseline is 19.9, right?
Yeah.
And our standard that state has set for us in the future is 13.9.
Yes.
Can you give us some examples of what the
test this is at the heart of that regulation. They're hoping what people will do is reduce their water losses. So they're saying if your real water loss is on average 19.9, they ran it through some economic model with information. Okay. And we plan to go back to the state to revisit the basis of that information, by the way. But assuming all that is, you know, legit or whatever. The way you would achieve that, they believe the economic, there's probably low-hanging fruit, they would say, is leak detection programs. So using, leveraging your AMI metering infrastructure to have a very active leak detect. Not saying you don't already, but that would be the answer that we would get from literature from the state. Is developing leak detection programs to identify where the losses are, whether it primarily leaks, but it could be theft or it could be some other outflow, physical outflow from the system that's not being metered and that's not being revenue. It's not a revenue stream, and you're paying for that water. So it's about finding where those are and reducing them. The other more extreme method would be pipeline replacements. Like doing a pipeline project will reduce leaks as much as whatever the pipeline is old and leaky. It would address those leaks within that main line that you replace. So those would be like the main things, like leak detection programs, kind of a general term, but there's a lot of kind of discussion that could go into that, like how are leaks detected, and then how are we, like, you know, finding them and reducing them or addressing them. So then the second part of the quiz, did that answer the first question?
I think so. And then the second question had to do with enforcement in 2028.
Yeah. We don't know yet, but most likely it will be, and this will be like an averaging. They'll probably take like several years and average it. It won't be like, oh, this year you didn't comply, you're going to get, you know, penalized. It'll probably be more like, hey, over a recurring multi-year basis, you're above that standard, and they'll probably be imposing more like plans, basically, that the town would pursue to. You know, they'll be looking for formal leak detection program language, or they'll be looking for some response and remediation type of plan. I don't know like what penalties or fines might be coming. That's really not that information is just not out there yet.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jason. Jessica, excuse me.
Jason, if I might. So we discussed this extensively to the staff got bored with my questions during the water wastewater committee meeting. So just for an understanding purpose, that I said the same thing. That's a huge anomaly. Well, how can it be three times? But the we're talking about real loss of water. So the construction there that we've been having lately, they come in and they turn on the fire hydrant. They're supposed to meter it, but they might not meter it. That's a tremendous loss of water all at one time. Another example might be the leak we just had over here by well 6. That thing could have, that little galvanized riser that was leaking might have been leaking for a long time at a very limited amount, and we would never notice it. We don't notice if the ground's wet. It's not even on our property. And then it blew, and then we knew that there was a problem. That's the real kind of loss they're talking about. And then the other big one that Aaron shared with us was that our water meters are now 10. Some of them, you were talking about how those aren't,
yes,
cannot, so they lose their efficiency after a certain of reading. So the readings become, go ahead.
Yeah, so if you look at the dates that they use that data from to get that baseline of 19.9, they use 2017 through 2020. Well, that's right when we put in 3,000 brand new meters, 100% accuracy. And then the other side of town, which had meters for 10 years, those meters were only 10 years old. those meters now are 20 years old, and the meters we put in 10 years ago are now 10 years old. So you lose accuracy with that. So that's why you're starting to see that number jump away there. And plus with the construction of the new Pantages going on, mm-hmm. there was some battling going on out there.
Reading is an anomaly.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. Like when we look at the record, I should have put that chart in there, but there's a record. We took all the previous audits, calculated that number, put it on a chart. That 63.2 is double what any of the others have been. So there was an anomaly last year in particular. And so the 2017 through 2020 were a little bit lower than the 2021 through 2023. Those were 2021 through 2023 ranged from like 19 to 35 or so. And then in 24, something in that reporting. So that was really just an anomaly, I think, in that particular audit year. On the point of like meter inaccuracies, the way the audits are done, this doesn't have to be done in advance of this urban water management plan. Again, this is just kind of reporting on the numbers. You know, the numbers are out there. They're all public. You know, it's audits have been done. They're reported to the state. So we put it in the plan. But moving forward, those audits, okay, the meter inaccuracies can be also viewed as an apparent loss because it's really it's not a physical leakage. You know, and the whole point of that water loss standard is to help people address what is a physical leakage from your system. It's an inaccuracy. And if that's the story, really, then we want to work with the water audit validator that's doing the validation every year to make sure that story is being reflected in the audit itself, which would put more of the losses on apparent losses rather than real losses.
Yeah, and we also asked if Justin was going to put some of that justification in his report to say, this is why we have this anomaly. And it's going to be mentioned briefly, but it's not an appropriate time to address that because they haven't come back to us and said, what's going on here? But we could kind of carry that in our back pocket and say, this is why.
Perfect. Justin, I just had a quick question. Regarding the ECC sub-basin supply that you mentioned, you said that the basin is sustainability is about 72,000 acre feet a year. Town of Discovery Bay estimated supply is 7,500. Is that based, how do you come up with that number? Is that based on the flow rate of our wells or how is that kind of determination made?
The sustainable yield is based on the modeling that they do for the basin. They do a whole budget of the basin of like the current use is documented based on actual pumping. The projected is an assumption on the available supply, for the whole basin, which is the 72,000. And they kind of assign that to the different retail jurisdictions based on, essentially it comes from what's coming from our urban water management plan. So they looked at the urban water management plan from 2020, which also had this higher demand growth, kind of more conservative growth projection and said, well, we would assign that as the supply. So it's kind of a little synonymous, like it's an available supply, but it's also kind of the projected demand. but there's the rationale, I think, in the GSP is that if there is that amount of supply occurring to Discovery Bay based on their demand, and then they have those built into all the other agencies, they come up with a like a projected pumping. I think the projected pumping was like 46,000 acre feet or something like that. From the basin, and their groundwater modeling that's done in the GSP determined that the sustainable yield for the basin is 72,000 acre feet. So I know I'm not answering your question exactly perfect because I didn't prepare the GSP, but the GSP clearly reports an available supply to Discovery Bay of 7,500 acre feet per year. And
the reality is at the end of the day, you know, I know I get a lot of questions. Hey, does everybody have enough capacity? You know, everyone's concerned. The residents are concerned. Do we have enough capacity? So I'm just trying to calibrate the information you're providing to say, yeah, we do. I mean, based mm-hmm. on what's already planned within our urban limit there, mm-hmm. we have plenty of accessible capacity for future needs.
Yeah. Historically, the basin has responded very well in terms of recovery. So when there's like a drought and people that use surface water and groundwater start using more groundwater, the levels go down. There's more demand on groundwater during droughts because of that reason. There's less precipitation, so there's less recharge. So it's kind of hit both ways. So we do see levels go down historically. And then when we get wet years, we see recovery. And that's the positive thing is you get full recovery in your basin. It responds to demand and drought, but it also recovers. And so that's kind of one of those key findings for the basin being in a kind of a healthy state. And so the sustainable yield is a saying that so long as that over the average, the pumping stays below that, it should continue to have that pattern of there won't be a chronic decline. Over the average, it will recover. And so I would say that's kind of the late my layman understanding and narrative for you there. The other factor is that, that's the way it's observed right now. And they establish sustainable management criteria. They say, okay, now we need to say if groundwater levels start declining periodically and chronically, they set these benchmarks of representative wells, representative monitoring wells, and they see those trends and they monitor it every year and they have these thresholds. So if anything were to ever go below one of the thresholds, they would have to revisit those assumptions and come up, they would basically say something's changed and we're no longer in that sustainable pattern. And so I guess to kind of alleviate concern is to say that it's monitored every year and evaluated from that sustainable management criteria. And then the GSP and those metrics itself are revisited every 5 years. So the current outlook, based on the patterns historically, plenty of supply.
Any more questions on board? Justin, we say thank you very much. Appreciate it. Unless you have some more you want to
All
add.
right. Thank you
Thank
so
you.
much for having me. All right. Bye.
Before we move on, we'll just open up. Is there any public comments, members online?
There are no hands raised.
Anyone in the audience wants to make a public comment about the presentation? All right, then we'll move forward to F2. Aaron, Edge Report.
Evening, board. Just a quick cross connection update. Since July 2025, we contracted HydroCorp to start doing the cross connection surveys here in Discovery Bay. Since the last report I received, they've completed 590 surveys that are compliant. And so far, we have 170 residences that are non-compliant. Secondary letters from HydroCorp was sent to these addresses to give them to set up a schedule to inspect the properties to make sure that all the plumbing there on the property meets the cross connection standards. So we have drafted a letter ourselves to send out to the residents that gives them 14 calendar days to schedule an appointment with HydroCorp to have their residents inspected for the cross connection. If they do not schedule within 14 days, then we will be ending up shutting off their water until they can schedule a date with HydroCorp. The letter will probably be going out probably in the next 2 weeks. And then when we get closer to the shutoff date, a door hanger will be sent to those addresses as well. The letters will be sent to the property that needs to be inspected. Plus, if that house happens to be a second dwelling unit or a secondary house or a rental, we'll be sending a letter to the property owner that we have listed wherever they may be.
And I'm sorry, how many were compliant and how many were uncompliant?
590
Were
were
compliant.
compliant, and then
That's a lot.
170 are out of compliance currently.
And that's the total population out of the first wave that we're.
Correct. We're a couple months, or we're a couple weeks behind, but yeah, that was from the last report I've gotten.
Doing a great job.
I don't. Thank you.
Thank you for the report.
Is there any public comments online?
There are no hands raised.
Anyone in the audience make a public comment? Okay, and we'll go to manager's report, the billing conversion. Margaret.
Hello, I'm just here to provide an update on our utility billing conversion. So over the last year, we've been doing an update of our financial software, and this was the last module to complete. We had intended to keep to our current schedule, to ensure that we had the proper data going from our old system to the new system, making sure that that information is correct. The bills did go out 10 days later than our normal schedule. But with that, we were able to do a bill compare to ensure that the information that was in the old system and then the information that was going into the new system were accurate. And if there were any changes that we needed to make, we would went ahead and made those changes to make sure that that information was there. So again, we did get that out, actually, now that I think about it, 14 days later than we anticipated. So it was right before the actual due date that we would have, which is usually around the 25th of each month. As a result of that, we made the decision to waive any late penalties as a result of us getting the bills out so late. So anything that was due on the 25th, there will be no penalties during that time. That being said, those people who had a sort of auto pay set up for the 25th, which is a Saturday, they didn't necessarily get the bill in time. And so some of those did fail. We have been receiving those phone calls. We've indicated to them that we will take that payment there. Their auto pay is set up for the next time that's there. And again, we reminded them that there is no penalties associated with that. So we have been fielding those phone calls, but I will say, and I know it was mentioned earlier in the communications meeting, I think our advance notice to residents and businesses to let them know that we were going through this process. They were appreciative. They were just trying to check in and see how does it affect me and what can I do about that. So with that, we are working towards actually doing our next full complete bill fully within the new system scheduled for next week. And so we anticipate, you know, that we will be getting that out generally on time. And again, we will continue to track sort of where we are. But with that said, I want to just also extend my appreciation to staff. Several within the office have been fielding the phone calls, making the changes. And so I just want to give a wonderful thank you to Kelly, to Zuleika, and to Terry, who took the brunt of most of that information that's there. So again, thank you to the team. And we should be hopefully in good position and really be able to use this information for good reporting going forward. Any questions?
Thank you. Okay, here's something I think a couple people are waiting for, an update on the poll. Monica.
Yeah, so we're going to give an update tonight on splash pad pool, and then I wanted to add a little update on a project that's going on here at the community center. So our splash pad was having problems. It had been down. We did discover that there was a short in the wires underground in the conduit that broke. So that is scheduled to be fixed on May 13th, so next week. So we're very happy about that. Pool, the lights were scheduled, the new lights were scheduled to be installed today, and they installed three out of the four. At the end of the day, they started wrapping up, and I got notice that they only had three lights. So we're sending an email out to the pool company to find out what happened and when they will be back out to complete that. They are all supposed to be replacing the handrails. Those are not in yet. We're waiting again from the pool contractor. As soon as they get them in, they'll reach out and they will be installing them. But in anticipation of all this, we've began advertising to hire lifeguards and staff for the aquatic season. So that is in process. And then tomorrow will be the first of a few scheduled appointments to have the pool vacuumed, rebalanced, getting it all shiny and pretty again. So things are moving, a couple little hiccups, but we're on top of it. And then the last thing was, I don't know if anybody noticed, we've got some construction going on here, light construction here at the community center. We went ahead and had all that river rock removed from in front of the courts. We're placing it with synthetic turf to create a nice another sitting picnic gathering spot. And that is being paid for by some funds we received through Measure X from the county. That concludes my report.
Regarding the pool real quick, are you still anticipating an end of the month opening possibly, or I'm not trying to hold you to it, but you know.
No, you could certainly ask. I know you guys always hear me say this. I wish I had a crystal ball, but we're kind of at the mercy of the contractors. So didn't expect this hiccup today for only three of the lights. And it took 2 weeks just to get those four lights, which was really three. So what I can assure you and everyone is that every step of the way, we don't hesitate. We don't pause. We respond immediately to keep the momentum going. I wish I could give an exact answer, but I never want to promise anything to anyone and have them be disappointed.
I was just trying to see if there's anything that has come up to, you know, give you concern that the end of the month is not going to happen besides the light bulb.
And hiring staff, which we're working on. That's a big one.
That is kind of a big one, yeah. Are there any other implementations besides the handlebars, the lights, and the rebalancing that could be done as well? Or
yeah, there is, but that's all still in the investigation. Again, we're waiting for, I wish I had all the control over it. I apologize, but we're, like I said, kind of at the mercy of the experts.
So Monica, is it the same builder or?
It is.
Yes, okay. Yeah, so the town is actively working with them to have them step up and
incredibly actively. Okay. And have been since October.
I'm not aware, but is this a long-term contract that we have with this pool builder, or is this just in terms of a relationship going forward? I know we had a relationship with them in the past in terms of making the improvements to the pool, right?
Yeah, that was the first time we had worked with them. So we've only done one job, and they did it from, you know, start to finish, and haven't had to reach back out until this happened. Did that answer your question?
It does. I'm just concerned about our future interaction with this pool builder. If there's, you know, he or she is developing a track record of disappointment, I guess. In terms of responses, right? So what do we, are we going to, after we get past these hurdles, you think that we're going to be able to sever or change the relationship that we have with this builder?
The relationship is great. We work really well with them, and they have been very responsive. There was a lot that kind of led up to that. And when the pool builder stepped in, that's when things started moving. There was another contractor that also worked on the pool, and that's when things got very delayed. But once the actual pool builder stepped in, things have been moving. And they've been very, as soon as I send that email, I mean, we'll hear something within 24 hours. And we work very well with them. So it's a very positive, successful relationship. Nothing has changed as far as that goes.
And my last question is, I know you don't have a crystal ball, so no, you're in the process of doing hiring, but do you anticipate, are you looking forward to having most of the programs that you normally offer to be able to offer this year, or because there has been a delay in hiring and maybe perhaps the pool of candidates is not as strong or large as normal, you would have to cut back on some of the programs?
My educated guess, based on doing this for a very long time, is it will be a very different season than it has been. And I will always be very honest and upfront with everybody about that. We are going to open everything we possibly can, but lifeguards have already been hired for other agencies. We like to have at least 12.
And currently you have
12 to 16. Currently we have zero.
Oh,
really? We have three that are returning, and we are in the process of onboarding them. But we do have it out there on advertising to hire. So if we get three, we will open with whatever we can do with three, and go from there.
I appreciate your honesty.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thanks, Monica.
You're welcome.
You got some challenges ahead of you.
Yes.
Okay, with that, we will move forward to Aaron, update on the water department.
Just a quick update, as Director Kevin, Vice President, mentioned the water leak there at Willow Lake Treatment Plant. It was two weeks now that we noticed. I think I came driving into the parking lot and noticed the parking lot just north of All God's Children was being flooded. And had to do a little bit of research to figure that out. And what we ended up doing was reducing Willow Lake, actually completely shutting off Willow Lake Treatment Plant and reducing a valve out in the boulevard. They're letting Newport handle all of the capacity of Discovery Bay. Luckily, it was a very cool April. We had not a whole lot of high temperatures, so we were able to get away with doing that. What we found once we dug down was a 2-inch galvanized nipple that was saddled to the 20-inch main. And that galvanized nipple ended up splitting from basically threads to threads. So like the 2-inch nipple might've been 18 inches long and maybe 12 inches of it was split long ways. So temporarily we put a clamp around that 2-inch galvanized, which if anybody knows anything about galvanized pipe, it's very fragile. Once it starts to get that state, you put a little pressure on it, it could crumble at any moment. So we were able to clamp it down, slow the leak way down so we're not flooding any parking lots, and then ordered a clamp for the 20-inch main that took roughly about a week. And when it did show up, it was, I think, Friday morning, and we decided to wait until just this last Monday to go ahead and dig down, expose the main, and install the saddle and or install the clamp and restore it to service. So it actually went really smooth. I think it was about two and a half days worth of work to get that done.
When a leak does develop, do we have any type of alarm system that notifies us? Or in this case, you happen to say it, so.
No, because technically the entire distribution system is a leak, right? Water's always running in it. It's always running through a tap at a meter. It's always running out of somewhere. So the treatment plants always see usage.
Got it.
But it's metered usage.
Right.
A controlled leak?
It's not a leak. The treatment plant sees it as a leak. Okay. The end users capture that and report back to us saying it's not a leak, right? The treatment plants don't tell. The treatment plants just send water out.
You need an eye on water for the treatment plant.
I mean,
so we kind of do to an extent. We have meters on there. We can see all the water going out, but we know what our peak demands are, right? So if it just happens to be 2 a.m. at night, an alarm will go off if a lot of flow is heading out of the plant. Like we get low level alarms in our tanks and we go, that's strange. Why is the tank draining right now? Why do we have wells kicking on right now? And that usually signifies that a hydrant was hit and we, you know, looking forward, unless the fire department has already called us out to it. So, but yeah, like if the 20-inch main completely broke, we would immediately know, one, by the amount of water flooding the school, and two, by the low level alarms that we can't keep up with in the tanks. That's the update.
Thank you. Perfect. Okay, do we have a general manager report? Nope. All right, then we'll go over to the standing committee. Leslie, do you want to talk about the communication?
Sure. We had a communications committee meeting this afternoon, and there was some discussion about some good communications that came out this last month or the last couple of weeks, addressing the utility bill conversions, and that was really great in terms of informing the community, hopefully heading off some calls and some confusion to the town of Discovery Bay, and people were very knowledgeable about that activity taking place. And then also there was some water quality kind of issues that came up that popped up on Nextdoor, and the town responded right away quickly and swiftly in terms of making sure that there was not misinformation about what was going on. And so that was a good communication aspect. And then the main thing was is Assistant General Manager Griswold talked about a proposed site tour program, which is really exciting. I'm excited about this. The town is looking to perhaps form a two tours each year, and there would be 10 participants per tour or something. It's in the early stages of formation, but they're doing it an exploratory on what that might look like and maybe do educational tours. But it was a really nice detailed presentation about that that will be coming to the board shortly. Did I miss anything?
I don't think so. Okay. Kevin, you want to go over the wastewater?
Well, we got the same presentation, two of them that you guys got. So I don't need to go into detail on that because y'all got the details. And then briefly, we discussed the contract with Veolia is up for renewal. And our attorney and their attorneys are working diligently on getting all the verbiage correct. And that will be coming to the board on May 20th for us to review and possibly approve an extension or a continuance, I guess is a better way to put it, of a contract with Veolia to continue to provide us with the services that they provide us with.
Sounds good. Looking forward to seeing that. Do we have any regional reports or training reports? Legal? One of these days you're going to surprise me. But yes, I do.
Next, I guarantee you next week he will have something. Next meeting.
Does anyone have any future agenda items? All right. Well, then, hearing none, 8:16, meeting adjourned.